I am a child of the 70s. Born in the 60s, but really grew up in the 70s. And yet when I think about my experience of the word and the concept refugee, my first clearest memory isn't a news report here or something I saw on television there, but rather my memory is of Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. And Tom Petty's great song, Refugee. I remember that coming on the radio and it immediately entering not just my mind and my ears, but my bloodstream. I love this song and I love his songwriting. The melody, the words, the Rickenbacker guitars jangling and reverberating into this great refrain where he repeatedly sings, "You don't have to live like a refugee." And then I think about the world and our country and the context in which we find ourselves today. And I'm not sure that that phrase really reverberates in a way that makes sense with our reality. When we see that although these words were written at the time as an encouragement to someone who's gone through hardship and betrayal and heartbreak in relationships, and to not give up and to not lose hope, in our current context today, where thousands upon thousands of people are fleeing countries because of famine and violence and injustice and seeking safe asylum in our country and other countries, and are being greeted by imprisonment, by being locked up in cages and facilities, separated from their families, and in some instances being not only denied their basic human rights, but some of the basic human necessities. I find it hard to imagine myself coming to them and just telling them that they don't have to live like refugees, especially since it seems like they've been given no other choice. The context for our ancient story this morning is one of famine. Famine in the land of Judah, in Bethlehem specifically. That city of David, that literally in the original language means house of bread. How ironic that this becomes a place of famine. This is not the last irony in this story. And yet this is a famine that forces migration, specifically for Elimelech and his family, forced into migration as refugees to the neighboring region of Moab. And once they arrive there, Elimelech dies, leaving his wife Naomi as a widow. Their sons marry two Moabite women, Orpah, not Oprah, Orpah and Ruth. And then 10 years later, those sons die, leaving Orpah and Ruth to join Naomi as widows. And this sets the stage for our story. What is to become of Naomi? A Hebrew widow living in an ancient patriarchal culture with no male support in a foreign land? Well, the answer that she sees, that at least is most obvious to her, is to return home to Judah, to Bethlehem. And she encourages her daughters-in-law three separate times to return to their home in Moab. She does this urgently, reminding them that she really doesn't have anything to offer them at this point, except uncertainty. The second time, Orpah responds to her request, and in tears and with kisses, bids her a fond farewell as she returns to her home. But Ruth clings on. And after Naomi's third attempt, Ruth responds. And it's interesting that Ruth's response has become one of the most popular passages in the Hebrew scriptures, in the Christian scriptures, and especially, it seems, more recently, as a passage to use as part of a wedding celebration. It is a beautiful and powerful statement of faithfulness and commitment. And yet, when we see it in its original context, it ironically flips the expected script of the story. It's actually a statement of resistance. Think about it. The resistance of a daughter-in-law to the expressed wishes and desires of her mother-in-law. In that culture, she's asking for trouble, maybe in ours too. Ruth does not do what she's expected to do. And so this is a statement not only of resistance, but of commitment and faithfulness from one woman to another. Surprising in that culture. A statement of commitment and faithfulness, one widow to another. And one culture and tradition to another. And even one refugee to another. Remember, as Naomi has experienced being a refugee to Moab, now Ruth is experiencing being a refugee to Israel, to Judah. And Ruth does what many refugees have to do when they're put in that situation. She humbles herself to enter into a new land, a foreign country, a foreign culture, and to do her best to adopt it as her own. She lays down her perspectives, her expectations of her own life, and what she knows of the world in order to connect and learn and grow and to even give comfort and receive comfort in a new land, a new community. And she freely chooses this. She freely chooses to support an older woman over the prospect of a younger man back home. She freely chooses to engage in seemingly inevitable poverty instead of a more likely financial security back home. She freely chooses to embrace a foreign culture and tradition and even a foreign divinity over the ones that are more familiar to her, even running the risk of facing rejection by that new culture and tradition. The irony continues in that Ruth, knowingly or unknowingly, actually embodies the greatest commandments of a tradition of which she is not a member. She embodies those greatest commandments that were shared by her most notable descendant centuries later, our New Testament reading. If you read on to the end of Ruth, you'll see that Ruth becomes the great-grandmother of David, who is the great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather of Jesus of Nazareth. Those commandments that Ruth freely and fully embodies to love the source of life with all that she is and to love others in the same way as she herself is loved, even as she loves herself. And what's even more remarkable is that foundationally she embodies the calling that sets the context to even be able to receive and enact those commandments. Mark's gospel is the only one that records the ancient words that precede that first and greatest commandment, "Hear, O Israel." In the original language, Shema. Hear, listen, be attentive, pay attention, be present. With your presence, to the presence. Ruth chooses to be present and listen, first and foremost, to that love at the core of the cosmos and creation and our being and hers. The love that then empowers her to be present and listen to the cries of hurt and betrayal and sadness from Naomi's heart, and to open her own heart humbly to Naomi as a source of comfort and support and solidarity. And what results? The daughter-in-law actually becomes the mother. She nurtures Naomi from a place of woundedness and bitterness, eventually, by the end of the story, to a place of wholeness and blessedness. Ruth is the refugee who models for the citizen of Judah a way of being present that embraces a community and a culture and a tradition that is different than her own. If you're like me, you hear the cries of the children, the adults, the families, the refugees in our country and around the world. You see the injustice perpetrated upon them. And if you're like me, you feel some kind of strange combination of rage and helplessness. And out of that weird conflux of emotions, there are times where I just want to do something about it, or I want someone to do something about it. To say it doesn't have to be this way. And I wonder, to quote another 70s songsmith, do you feel like I do? That's Peter Frampton, in case you're wondering. And then I wonder, what if the first thing to do is to be? To remember, as I'm reminded often, that we are human beings and not human doings. And to be present to the presence, capital P. Listen to the love, capital L, that is not only the core of our being and life, but actually is our being and life. And to allow that love to empower our passion to be compassionate, a supportive presence in solidarity with those who are suffering, to listen to those who have been silenced by circumstances and injustice, those who have been forced to live as refugees, and to hear them and let them know that they are heard by sharing their stories with others. Did you know that there are members of our community right here who have direct connection through their families to experiences of being a refugee? Could this be an invitation to listen to their voices, their stories? Did you know that two of our mission partners, Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon and Emerge, the Interfaith Movement for Immigrant and Refugee Justice, have tangible ways that we can be connected to hear the stories of those who are living as refugees right here in our context, right now, and to be able to be proactively present as a source of listening and understanding and empathy and solidarity? Who knows? By doing such things, we might actually discover that our expected scripts of life are being flipped over by these uncommon messengers and their unexpected messages. And who knows? Maybe St. Tom Petty was actually onto something with his song. I mean, think about it. Maybe Ruth's words of love to Naomi in her deep hurt and anger and loss, as one who had experienced at some point in her life being kicked around some, as Petty wrote and sang. Maybe Ruth's words that were embodied to Naomi through her faithfulness and commitment and sacrifice were actually a way to show Naomi through example that she didn't have to live like a refugee. And maybe those are words for us today as well, not only to receive, but even more to embody through our hands, our hearts, our voices as companions, champions, advocates for those who are living under the weight of injustice and intolerance and ignorance, who are ignored. Maybe our lives could be a proclamation to our neighborhood, our community, our city, our country, our world, that the ones who are unjustly incarcerated and ignored don't have to be treated as less than human beings, because they are human beings. They are we are them. And because we are connected as one through that love that fires the sun, that love that gives us the spark of life and the empathy in our hearts, that love that is the ground of our being and the source of our loving, reminds us with each breath and each heartbeat that we have power. We have the power to make it so that no one has to live like a refugee. Is that even possible? For Ruth, it started with one experience and with one person. What might that experience be for you, for me, for us? Who might that one person be that we can be present to and listen to and reflect back that commitment and faithfulness and connectedness that we have in the love of God? Friends, the life of Ruth and the life of Jesus reverberate with the same spirit. We don't have to live like refugees. Amen.